options activity has altered the investment landscape. Get an edge on this massive flow of funds with Tier 1 Alpha's Market Situation Report, brought to you by HedgEye, a daily newsletter of the latest moves in the options market and a weekly webcast featuring myself, Mike Green of Simplify Asset Management, and Tier 1 Alpha's Craig Peterson and David Pegler. Go to HedgEye.com/research for more information.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Unscripted Equity Curiosity, Season 3, Episode 16. My name is Ami Joseph. I am the Sector Head for Technology at HedgEye. With me today is Felix Wang, Sector Head for China at HedgEye, and Joseph Batesblit, Director of Technology at HedgEye. The focus today is going to be on part of Felix's coverage, almost like an intro for those who are uninitiated and unaware of this important part of this important coverage that Felix has. And I want to remind everybody listening that Unscripted Equity Curiosity is, of course, a free HedgEye podcast where Andrew Friedman, the Sector Head for Communications, which is internet and media and telecommunications, plus me, I'm Sector Head for Technology, which is semiconductors and software and IT services, get together with Felix Wang, who is the Sector Head for China. And we get together and we discuss various topics that don't make it into our research. And a lot of it is the background for our research, because our research, when we produce the final product, that's kind of like at the end of a period of research. And so everything before that ends up on the cutting room floor. And this podcast is supposed to be the cutting room floor. Included in the cutting room floor are topics like macro, which we also discuss, or themes. And also sometimes we host guests on our show, such as the last one where we hosted Brian McGough, who gave us a really amazing introduction to investing in retail and very powerful investing tips and tricks out of Brian and Jeremy McLean on the last one. Without further ado, let's get into China Internet with Felix. Felix, thanks again for getting into the spotlight and letting us grill you. And really what we want is kind of like almost like a teach-in, like a tutorial. Like if you were just starting today on China Internet, if I was just starting today on China Internet, what are like the key things you need me to know? Who are the key companies that need to be on the radar? Walk me through their business models. Who's strong at this? Who's weak at that? We've covered bits and pieces of this topic along the way over the last, 2.5 years of episodes of Unscripted, but I kind of want to do it right here in one bang over the next 30 minutes if we can.
Yeah, sure. I didn't agree to getting grilled, so hopefully give me some easy balls, please. So I actually not just cover China Internet, it's basically Asia. I mean, my main focus is on China, but more recently I've been focusing on some more countries in the Asia Pacific region. I know on the show we've talked about Indonesia. Some names in there. So I'm trying to broaden out my geographic coverage, so to speak. But yeah, on China, that's primarily my coverage space. It's not just internet. I cover e-commerce, retail, education, fintech, live services, along with the majority of the big mega cap names in China tech. So to answer your question, it's kind of difficult, but I'll try to address it the best way I can. You gotta have an edge, first of all, right? I mean, this is pretty common sense, but I compete with at least 100 China analysts out there covering these names. So we gotta have something that clients and that other investors could be getting excited about. So that involves data, that also involves contacts in the space. So that's kind of how I would describe my process. Which is, try to get data that is meaningful. I mean, there's a lot of misinformation out there. There's a lot of trashy data that people talk about that has no impact to the stocks, but data that's meaningful to the stocks that people investors actually care about, and then finding the right people, whether it's suppliers, whether it's people along the supply chain of a particular industry that's worth talking to and getting information on, to better understand these businesses, because Chinese businesses are not easy to understand. They're quite complex. There's a language barrier, if you're a U.S. investor. So I think, that's my job. My job is to educate. My job is to find hidden gems. My job is to basically try to add value, just like you and the rest of the Hedgeye family are trying to do. So it starts with data. It starts with connections. But then the other thing is, understanding the business model. And that's easier said than done, because you can go through, filings and talking to management. But at the end of the day, you have to figure out, why does this business exist, right? And where can it go from here? And where can it get hurt? Because management's not going to tell you, where they see challenges down the road. They want to tell you everything's going to be fine. We're very optimistic. And, but they don't actually tell you the other side, right? So that's where I kind of fit in as an analyst, to try to figure out, the risks down the road, whether this particular company does have a future, not only in China, but maybe even outside of China. So hopefully that's in a nutshell a little bit about my process.
It's a great start. Maybe we could dive into the business model side. Like, who would you say, let's say in China internet, or if you want to include Asia internet, and I know your coverage is much broader than just internet, but for today, we're going to zero in on the internet side. In China internet and Asia internet, like, first off, like, who are the top 10 most important companies in the space? And maybe you can walk us through, like, some of the business models, like maybe the top three business models or something like that, that, kind of are so difficult to understand. And maybe you can kind of like begin that road of unpacking, so all of our listeners and me, obviously, can also kind of like find our way towards this sector and enjoy some of the awesome rewards. Like, because as subscribers to you, as I obviously am, and those who are listening who also are subscribers to Felix's research, kind of like it's a great way to make money, because you're amazing at this. But like, we kind of, it would be helpful to have maybe a little bit more intro, background and stuff that we get that will help us as we listen to you, so we hint for clues and we look for things we understand, kind of put the notes in the positions into context.
Well, thank you for the compliment, and likewise with your research team. I just think, because there's a lot of moving parts to my companies. For example, the biggest ones that people most care about when you open up Bloomberg, CNBC, or whatnot are Baba, Alibaba, so it's big Alibaba, Tencent, Baidu, JD, Meituan even. So these are the these are the big giant names that global investors know about, and these giants have been around for a while. So these are not new companies. They're old, what I call part of old China. They've established dominance in many different facets of the internet sphere. And they're well known today for a reason, right? And many users use a lot of different products and services from these giant conglomerates, I call them. But with being a conglomerate, you need to understand each part of the business model, the business lines, and how they're interconnected. And that's fairly challenging. So for example, with Alibaba, most of their money and their focus is still retail e-commerce, but they have a cloud business. They have a digital entertainment business that they're trying to do a 180 on. They have a logistics business that they're going to IPO in Hong Kong very soon. So a lot of different moving parts, a lot of different segments. You need to try to understand and place a value on that segment and figure out, you know, who are the other players in that segment. And then how does the engine run with everything together, right? And it's very complicated. So that's just in a very broad context. I've only mentioned like conglomerates. So those are the top, you know, the big China tech names. And then you have the little names that very few people know about, doesn't get as much attention from analysts, just because, you know, there's probably not as much market cap involved and it's not as well recognized in terms of brand, in terms of their brand, but it's still worthwhile looking into just because, you know, it could potentially be a game changer in many ways in China. And I like to use the word disruptor. So I always look for disruptors, disruptors being companies that start out really small. Nobody gave a crap about, you know, they brush them aside, but they want to take on the big guys and they have something of value. The most perfect example was Pinduoduo, maybe, you know, 3 to 5 years ago. And now look how big they've become. You know, close to $100 billion in market cap. So they're no longer a small player. So I'm constantly looking at the next sort of Pinduoduos out there. But also keep in mind, you know, that these giant conglomerates, I mentioned five of them, they're there and they're big for a reason, right? Because they have a moat. They have a big moat. So if you're a little guy and you're trying to penetrate that moat, you better have something that's quite unique. Otherwise, it's just going to be a failed attempt. And the interesting thing, Ami, in China is everybody likes to copy everybody else. It's a very unique type of cultural environment particularly among the internet platforms, the internet giants. It's quite different here in the US where there's, you know, the internet guys know what they're good at and they just make that segment better. In China, they don't care too much. They know what they're good at, but they also look at what their competitors are good at and they try to copy what their competitors also are good at by spending a lot of money on these new ventures, okay? So that also has to be taken into consideration because if you're a disruptor, right, and you're trying to make your name and you're trying to penetrate that giant moat I talked about from these conglomerates, well, think about how fast or how easily those conglomerates can copy your business model. If it's easy to copy, then you may not have a sustainable brand advantage here. Okay. And that was my biggest point with a company called Shopee. They don't operate in China specifically, but Southeast Asia is a main market for them. So to me, you know, you have to think about both sides here. How do you disrupt the business? And then is it defendable once you disrupt it? Okay. So I, you know, that's something I look at, from my business model perspective. I know I don't have much details because, you know, a lot of these internet giants, they are special in their own way. So, you know, we can go into different names, and talk about different business models, but you know, I hope I give a sort of a bigger picture on what I'm looking at.
That's excellent. That's excellent. Thank you. Great piece on that. And so you mentioned, you know, five of the big conglomerates, then you mentioned Pinduoduo, and then you mentioned Shopee. Is there anyone else or are there, let's say, five tickers, five stocks that should be considered in that like up and comer category and that, yeah, maybe they're, they were a disruptor or they are a disruptor, they could be a disruptor. sector or something like that, like that zone, that aren't the conglomerates, but that are still very important names to follow?
Yeah, well, one that's done really well for us is Nuneso, because I generally think, you know, this company is the next Walmart that nobody talks about. When I first pitched this, I got a lot of laughs because nobody thought, you know, you're talking about Walmart here, the king of retail, okay, offline retail at least. But, you know, this company is going to have about 6,000 stores. Tell me another retailer in the world that can ramp up that fast in about 10 years. You can't really find many examples. Okay, so, you know, that's one company I'm keeping an eye on. There are a couple others that I'm working through, but I think, you know, even with some of the older companies, they are still disruptors. For example, you know, ByteDance, it's always a disruptor. Okay, TikTok, they're the owner of TikTok. They're the parent company of TikTok. They also have a Chinese TikTok called Douyin. They are disrupting everything. Okay, I don't, you know, if you brush aside the impact of ByteDance and Douyin, you need to reanalyze why. And I generally think this is the only company in the world that can one day come up with an all-in-one app, something that Elon Musk wants to do with X, formerly known as Twitter. But I don't think he has a shot. But ByteDance with TikTok can one day be the one app that you can do to do everything on. And they're getting there. Okay, they have extreme aspirations. And I don't care which country you're operating in, what kind of moat you've built. If you have a disruptor like ByteDance coming in there with the TikTok app, you need to be very wary, okay, of what it can do. And we're already seeing it. It's not like I'm just saying words here and hoping. You're already seeing the impact, okay, across many different ecosystems, social media, e-commerce, live services. You know, these ecosystems have already been impacted in many countries around the world, particularly in China. So understanding what ByteDance and is, I like to call them like a big octopus, huge octopus with tentacles around many parts of the world. It's really important to keep an eye on what they're doing. Their new products, the new markets they want to enter, how much money they're spending in each of these markets. All of this is important because they're, to me, they are the biggest disruptor in the world.
Hey, I have a dumb question. How would I own shares of ByteDance? It's not, what is the equity called again?
It's not a dumb question at all. I keep getting this question. I mean, there are if you have exposure or if you can get access to PE, that's the easiest way. But very few people can, right? So I think there's some website where you can sort of trade like gray market on these like share chance, but it's private. It's private. It's been trying to IPO for a while now, but now you have so much controversy with TikTok. And so, you know, they're trying to maybe split up the business. But yeah, it's IPO pending at the moment.
Got it. That would probably be a rocking IPO, I'm guessing.
That would be the most massive IPO since probably Facebook.
Yeah,
maybe. It will be the massive of the IPOs, probably the biggest IPO we will ever see in 50 years, in my opinion.
Because they really have a shot at the title, you know?
Yeah, well, but the problem is executing, right? I mean, obviously, in what kind of form? Is it just going to be, you know, U.S. version of TikTok, or is it going to be the whole parent or a Chinese version? I mean, they have different ways on structuring how to go public. But if you're a CFO right now of ByteDance, you don't get any sleep trying to make this happen.
By the way, small anecdotal tidbit is just that TikTok hasn't yet figured out how to make it very easy for e-commerce vendors and creators to sell on TikTok yet. They still haven't made it easy. It's still complicated unnecessarily. You know how like steps can just be, should just be like bang, 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 and you're good. You know, like, oh, yeah. You have an Instagram link store here, click this link and you'll be set up, you know, whatever. Anyway, that's a side note. I'm sure they will figure it out. Okay. And then let's go back to, by the way, I was going to dive into Minnesota and at MNSO is the ticker, right? It's an ADR traded. It looks like it's a $7.9 billion US market cap, right? MNSO?
Yeah, it's about $8 billion or so.
Yeah. Okay. And it's been public since October, late of 2020, it looks like. Okay, so Felix, so before we dive into that one, are there any other tickers on that disruptor list or on that potential disruptor list or maybe recent disruptor list? Like like Pinduoduo, MNSO, anything else, you know, any other tickers come up that you're like, okay, you got to look at this also?
I try to come up with at least one disruptor every year. I think, you know, this year MNSO has been my winner from a disruptor side. I'm working on a potential, and I need to qualify my statement. So when I say disruptor, people usually think, oh, this must be a young and up-and-coming company. But not necessarily, right? You could be a 20-year-old company, but you have this gigantic business realignment or gigantic change in your strategic direction, and that could prove to be more fruitful going forward. So to me, you know, that could also be a disruptor, even though you're an old company. So I wanted to just qualify that characterization of how I say disruptor. But in the past, you know, another company I thought was a disruptor. It continues to be doing quite well in China. And this was maybe 3 years ago, but actually I'm short it now, is Bilibili. So Bilibili, you know, they're a sort of a Gen Z platform, also in the internet entertainment space. They're a disruptor because at you know, maybe 3 to 4 years ago, they didn't really see much competition, particularly in the medium form video space. They were considered to be a YouTube equivalent, if you will, in China, and they were putting up a lot of great content and people get addicted watching to a lot of their anime content and so forth. But now, 3 to 4 years later, they're having some issues. Okay. But at least on the content side, Bilibili is still a leader. It's just they have probably the worst management team in my commerce space. So, you know, that's a key reason why I'm short. But the platform itself generates content that people want to see, and it's high value. Okay, and you probably learn something from it. So it's not like low value TikTok videos and so forth. So, you know, they're a disruptor. But the question for Billy that I constantly get from investors these days is, you know, can they right the ship? What's next for them now? And then more importantly, now I mentioned earlier, you know, TikTok, ByteDance, what they're doing. Yeah, they're copying a lot of what Bilibili is doing. So to me, that's a headache for Bilibili, okay? Unless they can defend themselves against ByteDance. So yeah, I'll just mention those two. I'm working on another disruptor, but I'll save it for another podcast since it's not out yet.
Felix, I'm loving this. I'm like taking notes. Sorry for the delay. I'm unmuting. Okay, so. And I'm assuming that people who listen to this and realize that holy crap, they should be making tons of money with you by signing up as either a pro customer or preferably an institution, where you really get the best of everything because they can access you and access your models and so on and so forth. I'm assuming that at customers, customers of Hedgehog China can access materials on MNSO and Bilibili and things like that, so they can get up to speed, like they can go through all of your black books and your PDFs and your notes. Is that like a collection of materials you have available for them?
Yeah, well, I hope my clients are making money through my picks. It's not easy being a China analyst, but yeah, like we have an institutional business, we have a pro business as well. The level of content differs, I think we have black books and notes just like everybody else, but in terms of the details, it varies by client level. But to sum it up, I hope people are making money in China. It's very hard. Three to four years money has been very hard.
Yeah, except for those listening to this podcast for the last, 3 years, 2.5, almost 3 years, everyone kind of can look at your record because you're on record on these podcasts with your big calls. And holy crap, Felix, you've had a great run. So pat yourself on the back. And then one more plug for those listening. Because I have this as well with my sector, and I have to say, like, the institutional experience for those who can justify it as a business expense and step up, it's totally different. Because let's say Felix has written about Bilibili, right? And that was, I don't know, the last black book on that was, let's say, a number of months ago, and now he's working on the next disruptor. Well, he's not working on a black book on Bilibili, let's say, but he's updated and he's got all the data, and you want to trade it, you want to be involved, you can reach out to Felix. Like, it's like when you're an institutional client, you can drop an email, you can just say, can we get on the phone for half an hour? And like, you can go through it on a regular basis. So that's one of the advantages of stepping up to institutional. I highly recommend for those who can to avail themselves of it. Now, moving forward. So with the time we have left, I just want to dive in here to MNSO, if we can. Felix, what was it about MNSO that struck you where you were just like, holy crap? Because I've had those moments, by the way, where you're like, you're reviewing a small company and you're like, oh my God, this could be the X. And you kind of see it. What was that light bulb that went off? Like, what did you see that caused you to kind of like really take a big step back here?
Yeah, excellent question. I think the best way to answer this is for listeners on the podcast to experience it themselves, because no matter how much I say, it's hard to understand the concept and what it can bring and why it brings happiness to so many shoppers out there unless you yourself experience it. And fortunately enough, there's probably a MNSO store right next to you in your neighborhood somewhere. They're in over 110 countries and counting. I mentioned before, they have almost 6,000 stores. So, and most of them are under the franchise model. So think about it. People, not only MNSO are getting excited, but people who want to do business with MNSO are getting excited about it. So that's why they're signing all these franchise agreements. So to me, I get excited about this because I go back to my days covering hotels back then. That was more of, franchise fees and fee income. So lucrative. You don't have to do much. You just collect the fees, and then it's so margin, and very, very high margin business. So MNSO, same thing. Collect the fees. Get the demand out there, high gross margins. Their gross margins are around 40% or so. That's pretty high, okay, for a brick and mortar retailer. I generally think, this is a demand story. This is a recovery story. This is a growth story. This is also a resistant story. What do I mean by that? So you have a lot of macro headwinds, okay? You have a lot of inflation headwinds. Okay, well, this is a story that can combat both. Okay, so that means something is working, that consumers keep coming back to this store and their products and keep buying from them, that is not shock, that's more shock resistant to what's going on in the macro space and the inflationary space. So we don't have time to go through why that is the case, but I wanted to mention that because that is key to finding, you know, some of the winners in China, because China has been under, you know, a lot of distress this year, in a year where I thought China was going to have a great growth year. But obviously the consumer is much weaker than what people have been thinking. But guess what? They're still buying MINISO's products. So the key reasons why. Maybe we can do that for another podcast.
Wow. Felix, that's a tremendous direction for all of us to go and study and learn for many reasons, including potentially even franchising one of them, if this is kind of like that kind of opportunity for those listening. Definitely one for all of us to check out in our portfolios. We didn't get to go through some of the big bad conglomerates. We've done that in pieces like early on in the podcast. So for those who want to go back and listen to one of the early podcasts, we went through some of the big business models there of the conglomerates, but maybe we'll have a chance to do part two of today's session and go through the business models of Alibaba and maybe one or two more on another podcast sometime soon. Felix, thanks again for sharing the learning. And for those listening, thanks for listening. And we'll see you next time on Unscripted Equity Curiosity. Thanks a lot.
Don't forget to check out HedgeEye.com to get more actionable investing insights from our team of more than 40 research analysts. And check us out on Twitter at our handle, @HedgeEye. This presentation is informational only. None of the information contained herein constitutes an offer to sell or a solicitation of an offer to buy any security or investment vehicle, nor does it constitute investment recommendation or legal, tax, accounting, or investment advice by HedgeEye or any of its employees, officers, agents, or guests. This information is presented without regard for individual investment preferences or risk parameters and is general, non-tailored, non-specific information. This content is based on information from sources believed to be reliable. HedgeEye is not responsible for errors, inaccuracies, or omissions of information. The opinions and conclusions contained in this report are those of the individual expressing those opinions and conclusions and are intended solely for the use of HedgeEye subscribers and the authorized recipients of the content. All investments entail a certain degree of risk, and financial instrument prices can fluctuate based on several factors, including those not considered in the preparation of the content. Consult your financial professional before investing. The information contained herein is protected by United States and foreign copyright laws and is intended solely for the use of its authorized recipient. Access must be provided directly by HedgeEye. Redistribution or republication is strictly prohibited. For more detail, please refer to the terms of service at hedgeye.com/terms of service.